Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic effect, where we can lean in for a little while and talk about those things that would often cause us to ask for forgiveness and apologize. Not to bring disrespect, but to acknowledge some interesting phenomena that are happening in Freemasonry. The malaise, and I'll talk a bit about the malaise in a few moments. It's the 27th day of January in 2019. We have eclipsed the Robbie Burns Day. I hope each of you had a wonderful occasion to think about the poetry. Think about the poet and think about the poetry of life. And you can ask yourself the simple question about the purpose of the poets. Do they address the soul of our existence? Mm-hmm. In some way, I love that kind of expression because it's out there. It makes us think. And here we're going to do that. If you are a subscriber to Masonic Effects, deeply honored, but you know that this is a place where you're not going to be chased. There is no inclination to encourage you to feel guilty about whatever your connection is with Masonry. I am here. You need to know that I admire the determination of Grand Lodge. I'm a huge fan, yes. But I'm also what I consider a conservative Mason in many ways. But it occurred to me some time ago that we need more than determination. Otherwise, we would have addressed the complications and issues that are facing us. Even to call them problems is a word that sticks in my throat. Isn't it odd that it's an elephant in the room kind of thing? And I have that kind of sensitivity, but also that desire to protect and preserve. So we move forward, but the solutions to what's going on around us, we're going to have difficulty finding solutions because we really haven't agreed on the problem. Unless we can define a problem, we can't fix it. It's that simple. We just throw our hands in the air and say, oh my goodness, something's happening, but we haven't been able to do it. And I tend to think it's not about consensus. Consensus really doesn't matter. It's about like consensus about mathematics. You think about the sciences, gentlemen, the parameters of a science are what they are. So if the discoveries of science that happened 500 years ago hadn't happened then, if the authority and the time had prevailed and continued to control the intellectual currency and spiritual currency of humanity, it wouldn't have mattered, because eventually those same ingredients, those same properties of science would have prevailed, and eventually the discoveries would be made. Eventually, it would just be interrupted in time. However, you and I are encouraged by the deep thinkers that didn't create masonry, but they formed it. That we are to weigh on one hand the value of science and to study it, and on the other, the properties and elements of art. And too often, we walk around heads in the clouds. It's not so much my own opinion, because my point here is that all of these properties don't matter whether we agree or we come to consensus about them or not. They are what they are. But the interesting part is that with the arts, if the sculptor hadn't picked up the chisel and hammer and created the apprentice pillar, it's highly unlikely it would never have happened. The artistic is not something that continues forever. It is what it is in its time. Oh, we can have different forms of art. Usually, you think back, the reaction is one of inspired awe or trepidation, where the people that are looking at it, particularly people with some meager sense of responsibility and authority under their belt, are weighing whether this new is a threat in some way to not to the stability of organizations or thinking, but a threat to their position in it. Yes, there is that element of conceit. Yes, it exists in around us. The consensus that we form isn't about whether we like it or whether we understand it. It is what it is, and acknowledging that doesn't necessarily make us clever, but it's a lot more insightful than this pretense that that our opinions are in fact truths. The natural law always gives us a sense of pause and balance, because that court is, the judgments are irrefutable and there is no court of appeal. So are we waiting for this magical moment? Well, it is superstition that's imploring us to do that, because the science is simply waiting. The use of determination isn't enough. This is where determination also needs the imagination of the wizard of the artist. Because if authority had been the solution, if that was the holy grail, then we would have worked our way out of this a long, long time ago. And rest assured, if you look through our history, you'll find that it has been tried and it's been disproven. We can continue to try it because it wraps us in some, you know, a big cloak of comfort. Well, there's an authority out there that will take care of this for me. Well, not exactly. We began a long, long time ago. I was talking to a good friend, a historian, as a matter of fact, of masonry, and talking to him about the roots. When did this start? And I was thinking 40 years ago, 60 years ago. He said 1806. So now, of course, I have to go and look at the continent. That's a body of history. to be able to make that claim that some of this did? Is that when we began chasing Masons? I would never do that. It would bring the order into disrepute. But we do these types of things a lot, don't we? Here, we have a really interesting and uplifting, more so than this. This is just punching holes in the sky right now. We're going to talk about living in a state of hope, which of course is Masonry. Before we get into that, here's a little something that I think you're going to enjoy. This is from a while ago. I think about 1958. Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, if you're a jazz fan, and to listeners from overseas and from coast to coast across the country, and you folks from Australia tuning in, and thank you for joining and coming back. Here, sit back and enjoy this and fill up your mug with something tasty. Thank you. Smoking, that is. Yeah, it's Lee Morgan on trumpet and Benny Golson on tenor sax. Just do yourself a treat and find that one. That tune's called Moaning. Wow. It's one of those just inspiring moments. For you lot, that are members of an organization that should never exist, who, think about it, an organization, a fraternal order that's existed in a formal state since 1717, based on ideas, values, ethics that came from the mists, influenced by thinkers back to China, back to the ancient cultures, China, Greece, the Roman philosophers, Persia. Yes, to think that it would exist and continue to exist and still offer some primacy to men. Remarkable. It shouldn't exist. You know, if you add it all up, you get a group of men in a room and they're likely to sound muscular and a bit thoughtless, you know, paying little attention. And as they grow older, they're likely to have expressed some levels of misogyny. So we're looking at the underbelly of the world, where what we say and how we say it does matter. We can be frank and we can be truthful, but we cannot do it with such a callous hand. We cannot. We're not that elevated. If our speakers were callous, but they were all elevated intellectually, then we would sit and listen to them. It would be like the very unpleasant conductor who's, we won't get into naming names here, but they were able to instill a sense of brilliance in the orchestra. But their personal lives and knowing them, we would want to stay away. And the same with some jazz performers. They were such unpleasant creatures. People to be around, but their work was utterly brilliant. Here, something, living in a state of hope, the perennial optimist amongst all of us, you too. Throughout history are examples of the tide of war rushing in and the tide of peace that follows. Today, the fate of all combatants is defining why we are going to battle. If we have stockpiled guns, then we need to search for targets, convinced it is our purpose. For those who believe we were created with purpose in mind, those who face hatred and cowardice as weaknesses, for the damaged who overcome cynicism and despair, it is possible to live in a mind state of hope. Not mine, but yours. And if we look close, if we find the petals that are not that different, that vigilance is not fear, that madness does exist, but it does not define us. For hundreds of years, we have been writing about hope being validated and shared with other like-minded. When it is understood, we pass the message on to next and the next and the next. But we are a practical order. It is not enough to dream, to be idle. We are the traveler who began to blend practical reason for connecting to new traders with moments of discovery. And then we realized we were not alone in questioning, not alone striving to understand, certainly not alone putting matters into our own perspective. We answered the question why. Not fully, but enough to be firm in our knowledge of the world. What have we mastered? Sometimes we ask great questions. Sometimes we even find an answer. Just when you think we are done, we find that time is only a point in time, that everything changes and truth endures. Diana Patton. Puts you in a mood. Puts you in a mood. Come on. A little bit more about the speakers of the soul of the universe, poets. Today I've stumbled across some bits by William Wordsworth. He was born after our constitutional thrust. Abram 17, 1770, if you're inclined. And he was considered, along with Samuel Taylor Coleridge, you know, Rime of the Ancient Mariner film, part of something called referred to as the Romantic Age of English literature. He revised his work. He lived reasonably a long time. He was 80 when he passed away, and the mantle that he created, the work that he created, the style, was passed on. And some would say that Lord Alfred Tennyson was the person that picked, the writer that picked this up. So this is a fellow that was able to, you know, live in the wander through the Lake District of England, and wrote down, shared his thoughts. Today, instead of wandering, he's talking about clouds and daffodils. We're not going to get into that. Sort of that striking little slap on the back of the head when you're in the rough student and you're learning about drama and the sensitivity and what it is that, what's the big deal about literature? It doesn't help you put a penny in your pocket. You know, that slide that education has, that gravity that has been pulling education away from the quality of the experience, the richness of life, the expansion of the human mind, and made it what amounts to either exploitation or greed or survival. You know, education as survival. Well, that's part of it. But when you begin to explore, what are the arts about? What is this? What is music? What's the purpose of it? It's like, what's the purpose? You can ask. It's hard to ask. What's the purpose of chemistry? Or what's the purpose of physics? And what's the purpose of botany? It makes us stop and scratch our heads and wonder. For me, it's like, why am I asking these questions? Just stop. You know, it's unessential. And then pose the question, but the answer comes if you let the question linger in the back of your mind, like taking a mouthful of good wine or a whiskey, and just not barreling it down, but to just savoring it, letting the tastes play on your tongue. You know, if you've done that, it's like an espresso. You just or a brandy. You just inhale it. You know, it's my old friend Lindsay. And taught me, it's what a candle is for. Eat your brandy and just inhale it. Let it fill you with these aromas and these flavors, and then you begin to get it. This is a fellow that wrote, this is the opening line in this. Milton, thou shouldst be living at this hour. I'm going to share with you his poem, London, 1802, and he was very critical of England and its people, and he was looking back nostalgically at a happier time in English history, and that's not unknown to you and I to feel some sense of nostalgia, especially when we feel this increasing drumbeat around us that, you know, we're going to be changing. Well, here, the sonic effects, we're going to lean into the speaker. We want to tell you the truth. We've always been changing. Oh, silly. We've always been changing. Change is something that we don't quite all always understand. It's some of us understand it better than others. Some of it, I guess you could say, we embrace it. Some struggle against it, you know. As if a change in time is somehow we qualify it and make it wrong. It's like when we make death wrong, or night and day, we start to make value judgments. The sins and crimes are things that are known to the existential crisis. Poverty is wrong, hunger is wrong, disease, pestilence, it's wrong. Here, this is London, 1802. See what you draw from it. It's frank, I'll give you that. Milton, thou shouldst be living at this hour. England hath need of thee. She is a fen of stagnant waters, altar, sword, and pen. Fireside, the heroic wealth of hall and bower have forfeited their ancient English dower of inward happiness. We are selfish men. Oh, raise us up, return to us again, and give us manners and virtue and freedom and power. Thy soul is like a star, and dwelt apart, thou hadst a voice whose sound was like the sea, pure as the naked heavens, majestic, free. So didst thou travel in life's common way, in cheerful godliness, and yet thy heart the lowliest duties on herself did lay. Opened his eyes and looked around. You do the comparison. We are selfish men. I like the part, you know, and give us manners, virtue, and freedom, and power. Yeah, give that to us. Give us the respect for it is, I think, what he might be getting at. Fitting. I put in a little piece of music from Oliver Nelson. It's called Stolen Moments. It sort of fits with William Wordsworth on this 27th day of January. Oliver Nelson. Stolen moments. Sort of like us. We steal moments in time. Here, we're about to address our attention to symbolism. I want to ask you, though, does a human being live a symbolic life? Is there some representation about our life that is beyond the practicality? I'm thinking that Freemasonry is instilling a sense of those honest moments where we don't rely on what we did yesterday. It's more that, what have you done for me lately? What have we done for ourselves lately in terms of self-development? This isn't like a ship that you should be on if you don't want to be there. If you don't want to be part of this, you shouldn't. If you feel that you dig your heels in some ways, that you resist, it's a question you want to put to yourself. What are you doing? Why are you part of something that is exploring your nature and is going to ask questions? It's a vehicle for asking the deeper questions about our value and purpose and the meaning. And it expects, all of that aside, it expects commitment. Oh, it's so much easier if you're thinking that this is a dressed up, this is a service club in a tuxedo. Well, not a bit. It's easier to be part of a meaningful experience with a service club. But this offers an opportunity for a bonding, for the fraternal order, the brotherhood, with the notion that we can develop certain insights through the commonality, through the purposefulness of a fraternal order that we perhaps couldn't on an individual basis. No, I don't, the jury's out. For me, the jury's out on that. I don't think that great minds, a great purpose comes from committees. And I don't think it ever has. I think we sit back and respect the singularity of a mind. It's not a committee that painted the great works or sculpted the great works. It's never a committee that designed the cathedrals. Never. It's the architectural design, the engineering capability of a man. And the rest of us, you don't have to necessarily like it. We can be competitive. Yes, all that pettiness is still there. But at the end of the day, history will judge. History will judge the efficacy. Were we intelligent enough to let Christopher Wren finish his work? Were we and it looks petty when the legislators were standing up in Parliament and saying, no, he's cost override, he's out of control, we need to stop it. Well, today we can say, well, that's, you know, if they had stopped the project, you know, look what they would have stopped. They would have had no, they were stopping the spending of a dollar, but not the, they had no idea. Ignorance, eh? And today we look at it and judge history, it judges those people. And we can say that was petty. This was true genius. But at the time, would we have had the ability to suck it up and say, right, he's onto something here. We've got to believe. At the end of the day, it comes down to believing and trusting in your judgment that there are people that can do things, and then we live with the consequences. There are people that can do things beyond our abilities. And when we find those people, we can encourage it. It's like why Masonic Effects turns to jazz. It's music that should never exist, music of slaves that were beaten and dehumanized. And yet it's spontaneous, it's joyous, it's a celebration, and it's enduring. It's enduring. By the way, so is Freemasonry. So is Freemasonry. Here, we have been exploring the whole concept of darkness. you know, without one, you don't have, without darkness, you don't have light, without light, you don't have darkness. So chicken and egg, which came first? Well, the darkness, because we know that the light was given, it was given into the darkness to resolve the darkness. So we start off in metaphorically in that state of ignorance or darkness. And we're expected to be receptive. Here, again, why are you here? Why are you joining the class? Why are you joining this college where the expectation is to be challenged and to learn and to be quiet about it? Aude, vide, tace, sive, versi, and pace. If you decide, choose to live, if you dare to live, pay attention, to live in silence if you want to live in peace. The symbolism of this dark state of the lodge is explained in those few words. On your admission into the lodge, did you observe anything different from its usual appearance? All was darkness, save for glimmering light in the east. And then blah, 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 that Freemasons will fill in. But there is yet hope. There is a glimmering light in the east, and we know from letters which have survived from that time that much discussion went on in the settling of the ceremony as to what light should be permitted. At first, there was a shaded light. Then a faction put forward the idea of a lantern in the form of a star. But this savored too much of a direct Christian reference at a time when the new rulers were seeking to make Masonry non-denominational in a religious sense, particularly as there were several Jewish lodges already in existence. So as the master was present in the lodge, his light remained, as the spiritual and moral teaching which he gave would still be with a brother at the time of death, although those grand luminaries, the sun and moon, would no longer be of use to him. By the help of this teaching, he would triumph over death and succeed to life eternal, symbolized not only by the raising itself, but by the restoration of general light to the lodge. This is the symbolism and message of this great ceremony. The subject of light was naturally interested a great many of the speculative writers who have given it many representations. Thomas Dunkerley wished to be enlightened with wisdom and understanding, and most when dealing with it in a general lumatory sense, have Masonic light in mind as enlightenment and knowledge. Dr. George Oliver wrote very deeply on the subject of light in Masonry in his Theocratic Philosophy of Freemasonry that was published in 1840 and ranged so widely over the subject of general light as well as special light or sources of light that here's an extra long extract that seems worthy of study. We'll give you the extract and then we'll... It was the opinion of Eugubinus and others that light was the supreme epiphrian or local habitation of the deity, which always shone with surpassing splendor, because the eternal himself was believed to be the source and origin of light. In all his communications with man, light has been his constant attendant, or in the Philistius language of David, he clothed himself in a light as with a garment. The holy book, which constitutes the furniture of the pedestal, is full of testimonies to this effect. God is termed by the prophet Isaiah the light of Israel. Daniel says the light dwelleth within him, and Habakkuk compares his brightness to the light. Simeon calls him a light to lighten the Gentiles. The glory of that light appeared to Saul at his conversion and to Peter at his miraculous deliverance from prison. St. John affirms that light is God, and God is light, and in another place that he is the true light, God. So we've eclipsed, you can tell, that we've eclipsed the notion of the limits of the Christian view. On this view of the subject, primitive Freemasonry may be referred to as the light of wisdom, to which the Almighty Architect of the universe possessed in the beginning of his way before his works of old. This wisdom of light is indeed the breath of the power of God, a pure, influential flowing from the eternal source of light, compassing the whole circuit of heaven and forming the architrave of pure and holy religion. It is to be observed that Solomon, our Grand Master, speaking Masonically, generally used the word wisdom as a substitute for light. Little note to self there, gentlemen. In all the divine manifestations which have been vouchsafed to man, it was necessary to accommodate the grossness of his nature by the use of a visible and material light. But it must be understood that this was only a symbol or a mild emanation of the glorious light which illuminates the celestial regions. This light, or Freemasonry, so to term it, was peculiarly intellectual. Freemasonry was peculiarly intellectual. A light adapted to the spiritual faculties, the light of God's word and spirit. It was enunciated with equal perspicuity. Oh, you wait all your life to say that word, perspicuity, by the Jewish prophets. Thus, Isaiah says, that in those blessed mansions the sun shall be no more their light by day, neither for brightness shall be the moon give light, but the Lord shall be everlasting light. It is evident, therefore, that the light of heaven is supernal and intellectual, and that a gross material light will be unnecessary to its glorified inhabitants. Of those complete illumination, we are at present unable to form any just or rational opinion. It has been correctly termed a glorious luster filling all heaven, an abyss of light in which the imagination is lost. Thank you. Homage here is, I remember Clifford Brown. Clifford Brown had died just 2 years earlier, and was only 26. He didn't live long, eh? But a beautiful tribute, wonderful tribute. Well, I hope we've contributed to your thinking. So we make assumptions here. Masonic effects. We assume that this isn't where you need to be embarrassed or to be defensive about the intelligence of Freemasonry. And to be perfectly clear, I do listen more carefully to thoughtful Masons who have demonstrated some intelligence. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about people with formal education, because I come from a line of people that had an enormous depth of understanding of the human condition. They didn't have access to all of the advantages of universities of that level of scholarship. And make no mistake, only a fool would be. Critical of the pursuit of knowledge. It takes a real fool. I have nothing in common with that person and I'm not really interested at all. But to develop insight it's not necessarily a degree or a course passed, or certainly not rank, certainly not part of a bureaucracy, certainly not. Putting on an apron doesn't equip us with insight. It is a symbol. You look down and see the apron that we wear. It's a symbol to the world that we have accepted a way of thinking. We have accepted. We have asked and we've been accepted into a college where the pursuit of insight, the light, the knowledge, the intelligence is part of our lives, and that living an ethical life is so important to us that we have joined in concert with other men in an organization based on values. Not the only values, but based on values. In some ways, I think that Masonry is the cradle of a lot of men. It's where we're nurtured, where we're provided a safety. But it's not for the foolish kid. The foolish kid that wants to run out in the rain without his hat and, as my old teachers would say, galoshes. Well, he can still run out. Nobody's going to stop him. If he wants to finish his day in the bar, passed out on the table, well, we'll help pick him up and dry him out, but will we stop the conversation? You see, the conversation, that the meaningful part, comes from people that have strong principles, have principles. Not necessarily strong opinions, but opinions that make sense, and an ability to articulate, an ability to communicate. As soon as I hear somebody, particularly, what's my peer group, an old man with distemper, I shake my head. Because it's like what they're saying is lost, because they're acting like they're offensive. To think, to be so disrespectful, to think that the exercise of authority or temper is going to validate what they're saying. Never, never, never. And you all know that. Anyway, I hope you'll come back and join us again in the future. We're this cradle of is big enough for other men. We are at a point of that we've waited for such a very, very long time, to expand, to turn toward the light, to turn toward the development of the intellect. Oh, those acts of Masonic kindness, that's part of it, but that's not all of it. By any stretch, you think this notion of brotherly love, relief, and truth, well, what about the other parts? What about that? I look forward to being with you again soon. This is, I'll leave you with a little Sonny Clark. This is Softly as in a Morning Sunrise. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, and I'll look forward to being with you again soon. Bye. Happy to meet again.